Oh, hello and welcome back to another episode of the Catch Yourself On podcast. This is the second episode of a two-part mini-series on TikTok, and this week we are going to be unpacking questions like, what is the business model for TikTok? And how is TikTok a platform that has been used and misused to convey public health messages and other forms of education? We're speaking all about TikTok in light of the COVID-19 pandemic, so this is a super relevant and relatable conversation, which I really hope that you enjoy. So, as I said, this is part two of a two-part mini-series on TikTok. If you haven't listened to part one yet, hit pause, go do that now, or make sure to go do that after the episode if you want to broaden and extend your knowledge on TikTok further. This week, to discuss how TikTok is affecting the social media industry and how it has been affected by COVID, I am joined by Katie Elson Anderson from Rutgers University. Katie's research focuses on social media in libraries, internet culture and misinformation, and disinformation and propaganda. This episode is all about how TikTok and other social media apps have been responsible for some troubling and dangerous spreading of misinformation. And we also discuss the power of TikTok as an educational tool. Without further ado, I'm going to share my interview with you, and I really hope that you enjoy my conversation with Katie Elson Anderson. So Katie, thank you so much for being here to talk all about TikTok and how it's affecting the social media industry. And I guess I just wanted to kind of start it off by unpacking the business model for TikTok, like its massive draw and appeal. Why is it so appealing? And there's 80 million active users worldwide. The average user spends nearly an hour per day on the TikTok app. So it really is taking over our lives to some extent, but also taking over the social media industry. So how would you even begin to unpack the business model for this?
So yeah, there's a lot there to unpack. It's pretty obvious that the pandemic itself has sort of brought TikTok to the forefront. I mean, it was certainly popular. A lot of people were talking about it. I remember early on, which is sort of what prompted my research, you know, the talk was about privacy, but certainly the popularity has just skyrocketed because everyone is sort of a captive audience, you know, not leaving the home and really just trying to still connect. It's an excellent way for connection. So the business model too is, it's similar to most social media, which is essentially they want you to be using it as much as possible, to be sharing it. What I find interesting about TikTok is a lot of people were hesitant to sign up for TikTok or to actually use it because of those early, you know, privacy issues. But what was happening was the ability to share on TikTok, I mean, it's an excellent business model for them. So that content was making its way to Facebook and to Twitter. The first TikToks I saw through my Twitter feed. So that ease of sharing then would draw the audience. And I think that's sort of different than, you know, if you're on Instagram, it's impossible to share content. You know, you have to like go through third party and try to do that. So yeah. I think TikTok's business model of let's just put it out there, it's going to draw more people in.
Yeah. And also the way, yeah, you're so right. I kind of had forgotten about how it's like cross sharing, isn't it? That you can share it on multiple platforms in a way that you can't with other social media. And obviously what you were saying in terms of data privacy and policy and security and that kind of thing. And I know that there were a lot of concerns raised in the US about that this year. But in terms of how you kind of touched on it already, but in terms of how you think COVID has really impacted the acceleration of TikTok, in many ways, it's created a really positive space where people can escape the horrible realities of what the pandemic is doing right now in people's lives. Yeah, how far would you say that COVID-19 really has accelerated TikTok? Because I hadn't heard of the platform before the pandemic at all. I don't actually have TikTok, but I hadn't heard of it. And then everyone was talking about it, or it seemed like everyone was talking about it.
Right. So, I mean, it had a pretty steady growth rate before the pandemic. And then, of course, you know, when the news was hitting, you know, obviously, you know, in the United States, you know, there was this push to actually ban it. That's obviously going to escalate awareness of it. But I think the way the platform works was so suited to the pandemic in the sense that it's short videos. They don't require a lot of attention. And at many points, you know, and I think we're all experiencing this during this time, is that you just don't have the mental capacity to read even, you know, words. Yeah. And so, you know, so the TikToks provide quick connections, you know, short bits of information that our stressed out brains are able to comprehend and to enjoy and to connect with. With Twitter, you know, there's the concept of doom scrolling, and I'm certainly do that a lot. I spend a lot of time, and you know, you don't get as much joy out of that, you know, because yeah. you're looking at content. And when you're looking at TikTok, I find, you know, there's those moments of joy, even if you're hitting something that's serious or sad, or, you know, popping that bubble, you know, back to reality, mm-hmm. you know, you're able to quickly move on to something else. And so mm-hmm. the overall experience of using the app tends to be more joy than other social media apps.
Yeah, I'm really glad you said that, Katie, because that was one of the things that came up when I was doing research before preparing to talk to you. It said you actually feel really good after using TikTok, which is really interesting because in so many ways, as you say, like doom scrolling, and when you come off social media, sometimes you can feel like comparison, my life isn't as good as that person's, or if it's really political, and then sometimes you can feel a bit down about what's happening in the world. But also TikTok is political in some ways, and I know that there's been like a lot of controversy brought with it, and you've done a lot of work not only in relation to COVID-19 but also how it's been used as a tool for misinformation, disinformation, wrong information about public health messages. And I know that the UN have been working with platforms like TikTok, Snapchat, Facebook to try and get the right information out there because people are spreading these fake news. And there's a whole page on the World Health Organization about Mythbusters telling people this is not how COVID spreads. And yeah, maybe you could unpack a bit about how TikTok has been used as a platform for public health messages in a positive way, but equally in a negative way in that spread of misinformation.
Sure. So like with any social media platform, the danger of misinformation and disinformation is how quickly it can spread. Yeah. You know, I do a lot of work as a librarian, you know, librarians have been doing this for years, you know, since the first bad information, we've tried to correct information. So it's not new, but what makes it so much more dangerous is how quickly it can spread on these platforms. And TikTok is obviously an example. I mean, kind of going back to that business model, they make it in a way that it's just so easy. You don't have to have a large following. You don't have to be an influencer for your video to go viral. So basically anyone, you know, anyone's voice is there. So it's much easier for any one person, you know, to spread the misinformation. And what impressed me about TikTok was that there was a response from the platform to try to partner with scientists to counter a lot of that misinformation. And recently when I was looking at it, prepping for our talk, I did notice that they have now anything that's COVID related, there's a little banner on that content.
Yeah.
You know, they're attempting to direct people. When you go to that page, then there's official doctor accounts, there's the WHO account. So they're pushing for that, which I think is really important because of the amount of misinformation.
You're totally right. You used the word dangerous, and it really is. The UN said that the misinformation that was spreading because of the pandemic was more dangerous than the pandemic itself, and that people were dying because of these harmful messages which were propagating online. And I heard that of the story in the US where actually a school teacher got her class to share something that she had written just to see how far it spread and how quickly to get to the other side of the world. And we're seeing that as well, but in a positive, well, we're seeing that also in a positive way when a lot of people were putting up videos of like how to wear your mask correctly, how to wash your hands and all that kind of thing. So I guess maybe you could speak into that as well, how it's been used in light of COVID, but in a way which is positive and helpful to communities.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was just watching a few more and, you know, watching how to wear the mask properly. And, you know, obviously that platform is perfect for that because it's just a few minutes and you're watching somebody do it. You know, maybe there's not even that much text, and it's much easier to sort of consume that than reading two paragraphs on how to do the mask. With all social media, it's sort of leveraging the positive with the negative because of the dangers of misinformation. But then you counter that with the amazing ability to get information to vast quantities of the planet through these social media apps. So putting out that good information, which is why I think it was really important that TikTok had made those strides to partner with official accounts.
Yeah, for sure.
Who were able to be verified in the way so that if you were watching the video, you knew this wasn't somebody telling you, you know, here's how you wear a mask under your nose, you know. So yeah, it's been really fascinating to see things that talk about the importance of, you know, vaccinations obviously is becoming a much bigger part of the platform now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we struggle with an anti-vaccination message in certain groups. So it's important to get those messages out. I've seen some doctors, you know, very quickly giving that information.
Yeah. And not only in terms of public health and how that can be used to educate people, but also in terms of education in general. Do you think the fact that TikTok is so condensed, as you said, like a 15-second video, we can really leverage it as a tool for education? Or do you think it has its, well, obviously it kind of does have its limitations, even in the sense like temporal limitations, but how far do you think we can leverage it and harness it as a tool for education? Do you see that as something which will become increasingly prevalent, even within like academia? Or
so, I mean, I'm always the optimist with social media, and I'm constantly looking for ways to connect, which is where my interest in research with social media started, other than I enjoy seeing it from a social perspective as well as an educational. And so I'm always going to argue that yes, there is a place in education for the social media, even if it's just a minimum to connect, you know, and especially now in the pandemic, you know, you see a lot of teachers out there who are using TikTok doing virtual teaching. And so the TikTok gives them that opportunity to sort of express themselves that they're not able to do, you know, via a Zoom classroom. Obviously the limitations are you're not going to get a full history lesson, you know, in a 2-minute TikTok. Though I am so impressed actually with a lot of the content that I see. People are able to not only just like present the facts, but to contextualize it and really sort of address a lot of the misinformation, or even address the fact that here in the United States, at least, we're all on a very strong learning path towards a lot of, you know, social justice issues and what we're dealing with politically. So that is really valuable because maybe you're not getting all of the information out there, but it's like a starting point. I guess one of the examples that has been recently, I don't know if the sea shanty TikTok has hit, but right now everyone is sharing sea shanties through TikTok. So what happened was one, I think it was a postman, I can't remember his name, did a sea shanty. And then what's really spectacular about TikTok is that ability to add on your own content for collaboration. And that's what makes it unique to a lot of the other social media content. You can almost engage with the people and then we can create this collaborative.
Yeah.
So somebody started with one sea shanty and now it has blown up to the point where, you know, there are multiple people building on these sea shanties. They're singing it, they're harmonizing it, they're playing their fiddles with it. And it's just really phenomenal because not only is this, you know, interesting content that's beautiful to listen to if you like sea shanties, but now I've seen multiple articles that have been written about sea shanties. And I have learned more about the history of sea shanties than I ever would have imagined.
Yeah.
Just because it became this. And so there are all these opportunities. So something goes viral and then people write about it, learn about it. I think there's constantly an education going on.
And what you were saying, Katie, about the collective as well, that multiplicity of perspectives is often cross-cultural. And it's often, I think, the power of TikTok as well, with the speed at which things do spread, to for people to come together in different countries from different cultural backgrounds, different communities. And that's really beautiful as well. And we did see that in the pandemic a lot more for sure. And do you think in a way we're pushing towards more kind of collective collaboration with TikTok? Or do you think in some respects, because of like celebrity culture and the idea that an individual can like pick up their phone and film themselves, do you think that's kind of more individualistic? How do you see it in terms of the individual and the collective?
I think with TikTok, it sort of in some ways decentralizes the individual because there isn't this sense, and you know, I've used it enough for the research, I'm not a heavy user of it, but I do not get the same sense that there is, because of the fact that when you're scrolling through, you can see somebody who's got 300,000 followers and you'll also see content from somebody who has 5 followers. To me, I feel more of that collective. Now there's obviously there's influencers and there's, you know, I will give a shout out to the New York Times reporter, Taylor Lawrence, who does amazing work writing about sort of the cultural phenomenon of TikTok. And she'll write about the influencer houses, you know, so there's entire houses dedicated to creating content.
Seriously?
Yeah. So again, that takes away from the individual. It's more of a collective. Yeah. People who follow these influencer houses may not know the names of all the different individuals, but they know the name of the house. There's a house called Hype House.
No, that's so interesting. I hadn't thought about it like that before. And the fact that you're constantly building on someone else's work, it might not be quote unquote original, but everyone's coming together and putting their own unique spin on the piece of content and then recreating it in a sort of way. And I guess my next question would be how you think that's going to affect wider culture. How do you think pop culture, other social medias are going to map onto this? Because I know in some ways, platforms like Twitter, Facebook, or seeing TikTok as kind of a threat.
Right. I mean, we think we saw recently Instagram released their Reels, which is essentially, it's essentially TikTok. it's just not as popular at this point. And so they're trying. Now, I haven't looked in enough to understand if it has the ability to build on people's content and the duet. Mm-hmm. And no other platform at this time really has that. And that's what's making TikTok, I think, so very popular during this pandemic, because we are all craving this contact and this connection. And watching the videos, you know, there have been several there. So there's the sea shanties, but there was one a while back, which started out with just a person singing. He'd written a song about being in the grocery store. And people then created characters. So he was, you know, a sad person in the grocery store, and they created characters to the point where it had gotten built on till somebody was actually like the squeaky wheel on the shopping cart. Somebody was making the noise of the doors that open. People were just so creative. And those are a lot of the content I see that's viral, is the content that's been added to. But when you're talking about, back to your question about, you know, how other social media platforms might be sort of, you know, reacting to it or looking to it, they obviously are going to see it as a threat in some ways. But I think some are actually, like the music industry, I think, is sort of turning to it and sort of figuring out how to leverage it rather than seeing it as a threat. Mm-hmm. Because what I'm seeing is it's sort of creating this like feedback loop among all the social media platforms. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously if something goes viral on TikTok and it gets shared on Twitter, Twitter's benefiting.
It's like a win-win almost. And the way that the music industry is leaning into it is interesting, because in some ways it really did shake up the music industry, right? Like, it's interesting, the artists that have been super successful on TikTok really have boomed as well, and their songs have boomed. And again, it's that like recycling of content, because some of the songs are from ages ago, like they might be really old songs as well. So it's interesting to think about, yeah, how it is benefiting industries in a way, instead of seeing it simply as a threat, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And the nature of storytelling and TikTok, you know, the way obviously 15 seconds, not a lot of time to tell a story, a lot of time to weave a narrative. And I think that you see kind of a lot of isolated videos. Would you say then, Katie, that it's kind of affecting the nature of storytelling, maybe breaking it down?
So I would actually think sort of the opposite in some ways, because I feel like those videos that are building on each other are sort of like a new type of storytelling.
That's really interesting.
And so, you know, I'm not sure there's an answer like yes or no on either one.
Yeah.
But I think the internet obviously is a newer, you know, it's not that new, but a newer platform for storytelling. You know, you're taking oral traditions. I think it's actually enhancing storytelling just in a different way. From an archival standpoint, everyone's story that's being told during the pandemic right now, you know, that's like going to be, I'll geek out a little on libraries, that's going to be a primary source for people who are going to be studying the pandemic, you know, 20 years from now. That TikTok of, you know, somebody reacting to their situation is going to be similar to the Civil War letter that somebody sees in the archives of a library.
That is so cool to think about, isn't it? A new form of documentation in a way that will be looked back on and then mapped onto in terms of how the pandemic has unfolded. Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy to think about it. And, I mean, you know, it's obviously harder to archive digital content because somebody, you know, deleted or things like that. But I think that, you know, that's something that we as librarians and archivists right now, the archivists are looking at ways to preserve that, because it will be important. So it you can look at the full collective of TikTok, and basically it's the story of the pandemic being told from every perspective, you know, across the globe. So that would be an absolutely interesting study.
Yeah, no, that's a really, really insightful comment. And in that way, you can really understand how TikTok is a very powerful tool. And if you look back retrospectively, it'll be really interesting. But equally, going forward, how do you see TikTok kind of moving on from where it is now? Do you see it growing and growing, or...
It's always hard to tell with social media because something can be huge for, you know, a short period of time and then sort of fade away. And even TikTok itself is sort of, you know, some people look at the predecessor of TikTok, which was Vine, which was a very popular looping video.
Yeah, people have mapped comparisons, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah, which then just kind of like promptly went away. And, you know, fortunately, some of those vines are actually preserved on TikTok. So it's always difficult to sort of, you know, future-proof yourself. Social media in that sense. TikTok is still showing immense growth. And I think that, you know, going back to sort of the feedback loop and the music industry, you know, it's benefiting other industries. So I think it's only going to keep growing. There's these opportunities now that marketers are seeing where they can pay an influencer to, you know, wear the leggings and then everybody is going to put up their videos of them wearing it and then everybody wants to buy it.
Yeah.
The music industry, again, they're benefiting in a way, and because they're finding people to sign, to take advantage of when, you know, I think the most recent viral video was with Fleetwood Mac and their music from 1977. So most of the people on TikTok probably hadn't heard, you know, I'm making broad generalizations, but you know, it was a song that was not in the public consciousness at the time. And so it actually was now like the number one streaming song. And then they actually got Fleetwood Mac to respond with their own video. So everyone's sort of looking at TikTok to see how they can leverage the content and use those influencers.
Yeah, the idea of influencing on TikTok is actually quite interesting when you think about a video rather than an image. Yeah, companies really are recognizing the value in someone putting up a video with a certain product and then that going viral, right?
Yeah, it's not just the music, it's also the dances. You know, sometimes they make their way. I mean, everything, a lot of content from TikTok makes its way into the wider popular culture. So like there was a dance that was made and then it became an emote on the game Fortnite. Another recent crossover was the musical Ratatouille. So people in their creative states right now, everyone worked together to create a musical. If you're familiar with the Disney movie about a rat, Ratatouille. And it actually built to the point where Disney worked to produce a virtual Broadway play that you can actually purchase online. There again, it like crossed over into multiple industries.
Yeah, which is really cool, like multiple industries, multiple perspectives. It's really cool. And finally, just moving slightly away from TikTok, but obviously TikTok is an app and the way that we use our phones now is really, really different. And TikTok, as we've discussed, has kind of changed the face of communication as we know it. And people are no longer interacting face to face. But I find it really interesting that people will communicate via this app rather than call someone. Like our phones are now being increasingly used for applications rather than the functions of a phone typically, like calling, texting, that kind of thing.
Right. So, yeah, I think many people have the experience when a phone rings, you're sort of looking at it and thinking, oh, right, it's a phone. How do I answer
that? Is its primary function.
Exactly. You know, so they really are just tiny app machines at this point. I don't have the experience or the knowledge to really sort of, you know, discuss sort of the psychology behind it, but there are multiple studies that do exist on that topic. Social media sort of gives you the ability to put yourself out there in ways that, you know, a phone call does not. So you're creating your image persona in a way. That persona can be completely sincere. It can be who you are, or it can be who you've decided you are on the internet.
I know it is kind of reminiscent of a performance in some respects.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, the ability to create that performance, you know, can be a creative outlet. It can be a way to deal with issues that we're all dealing with right now in a pandemic. Social media's ability to connect with people has been something that I always have focused on. So that's not new. It's just the need to connect became sort of increased.
Yeah.
Screen time obviously went up because we're not out with our friends, you know, exactly. We're not doing things. people are aware of the fact that we're probably using our phones too much on these apps. And we had those opportunities to put them down, and we don't have them as much now because they're there and we're in our...
But what you were saying about people performing, the way people do kind of enact this persona, as you said, Kayleigh, it's just really interesting to think how someone would be scared of picking up a phone, because a lot of people are, as you said, like they, when the phone rings, they look at it like, I don't want to answer that. But then they'll happily put themselves online. It's just really strange because it's like a different sort of confidence, isn't it? Would you definitely tie that to kind of younger generations? Or do you think that's just something which people have learned as technology has developed?
I would probably say that part of it is age, because I mean, if you didn't grow up with a telephone in your home, you know, ringing, you know, like it is more of a foreign concept that you would pick it up and say hello, you know, and that at one time obviously was the only way to get in touch with people. So I think if you haven't had that experience, you know, and there's always been this ability to connect with anyone, that is probably part of it. You know, part of it's also likely, you know, personality as far as how you're comfortable communicating in different ways with different people. I wanted to touch on what you said about the privacy. It is, it strikes me when you're saying it, that people are hesitant to pick up the phone, but they'll put themselves out there, you know, on a viral TikTok. And I think that part of that is there is not always the understanding of all of the privacy implications when using all of these apps. And that's something that actually I just recently started focusing a bit more on, the importance of understanding when you post a video, what are the privacy implications? A lot of the social media apps default to public. TikTok did recently change their settings so that anyone under 16, the default is going to be private. And I really applaud that, because so many kids start using an app and, you know, a lot of parents are not always aware of
what's going on.
And so I was really happy to see that decision from TikTok. It's one of the few I've seen that has just said the default is actually private.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. And it's definitely their responsibility as the application, because as far as parents have a responsibility too, but they don't understand it a lot of the time, as you say, if they're not familiar with what the application does. And you're so right, because a lot of the time you don't even think to go to settings when you set something up, even on different social media applications as well. It's exactly the same, and you have to actively go and change the settings. So yeah, that's so true. And going back to that idea of connection as well, we have seen how TikTok is really good for maintaining and preserving friendships too, even during the pandemic. The only thing is, I think a lot of the time when you see what other people are doing, you are less likely to reach out and talk to them. And I think that's what's quite troubling about it in some respects. Like if someone posts about a holiday that they've been, and you've seen they've been in France, then you don't feel as drawn to ask them about it because you've seen all their photos and you've seen what they've got up to.
Yeah, I think it has certainly changed so much about the way we communicate. A wider experience during the pandemic for myself was that I was connecting virtually with a lot of people that I had not connected with in the past. Suddenly I was doing Zoom calls with, you know, people who I graduated from college with. And we had kept up primarily through social media. When we were talking, it was like, yeah, well, I saw that. Oh, I saw you post that, you know? And so yeah, it does absolutely change the way you're communicating with people. And I don't know the statistics, but you know, the number of times people are younger generations that use TikTok are posting on TikTok, you're practically getting, you know, in some cases, a full vision of what they did that entire day.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, a friend doesn't need to call and say, how are you doing? They can see that, you know, but it is important to remember that what they're seeing is not always the reality. So the danger of that is, you know, you're checking in on your friend's social media and they look like they're having a great time and everything's fine, but they could actually be struggling, you know, and you don't realize that. I think that's
for sure. Yeah. And as you say, a lot of the time people are struggling right now, obviously, because it is a global pandemic. And yeah, to bring us back to what we said at the beginning, I guess TikTok is a really welcome distraction from that. And it is escapism, a creative outlet, an outlet for people to connect. And that's really, yeah, that's a really beautiful thing.
Absolutely. I think the reminder always with that is being, you know, aware of the pitfalls and the, you know, and the risks. But yeah, I think that TikTok itself has been much maligned for a variety of reasons. And I think that it's important to understand all of the positives, the connections and the collaborations and the potential.
For sure. Yeah, it's really refreshing to hear that as well, because I think a lot of the, I don't want to say negativity online, but I know online there is quite a lot of, I don't know if this is the algorithm, but when you type in TikTok is, and then dot, 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 and you see the adjectives that come up, and it's okay. Like bad, dangerous, banned.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think it got that reputation, you know, but in my research, what I found is it's no worse than a lot of other, I mean, they fixed a lot of the things that that were concerned with, where they were using the data of 13-year-olds, and, you know, that violated a lot of the different countries, you know, policies. I think they're responsive, and that's important. And I didn't find that it was any worse than any other social media platform that, you know, is using our data and the dangers involved there. So
no, for sure. That was one of the quotes I read. I can't remember who said it, but they said it's not any worse or any better than Facebook, Google, and thousands of other apps that are going on already. Any free service is going to want to monetize the data that they're accumulating.
Exactly. You know, they're for profit, you know. And we're important to remember that when we're using it, you know, we're providing them with the product.
Yeah, ultimately. I hope that you found that conversation really refreshing. I really enjoyed talking to Katie about a lot of the positives and the potential of social media, even when it comes to communication and education. Ultimately, it is the responsibility of these apps to make sure that we are protected when we're using their service, but also it's always helpful to remind ourselves that we should be mindful when we're using these apps too, and taking care of ourselves, our hearts, and our well-being too. So I hope that these episodes have prompted a few questions when it comes to the way that you engage with TikTok and other apps, maybe help transform your usage of these apps in a more positive way. That is it from this week's episode of the Catch Yourself On podcast. Thank you to Katie for sharing with me in this conversation. Thank you to Joe and James for composing the music to the podcast. And again, thank you to all of you for downloading this episode and tuning in. If your ears liked what you heard, be sure to check the podcast out on Instagram and head over to Apple Podcasts, where you can leave a review as well, because that's always really helpful for getting the word out so that more people can listen. I look forward to speaking into your ears next week with non-TikTok related content. Until next time, bye!